everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. I have a guest for today's programme, Nancy Tate, and I'm sure many listeners will know that Nancy and myself both work from the website Free of the Golden Light. I'm hoping Nancy is waiting for her introduction. So, are you there, Nancy?
I'm here. Hi, Mike.
Oh, that's fine. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Glad we managed to connect you. We had a little problem at this end. I seem to have got cut off. But anyway, you're there. What I'd like to do for the program is to ask you, what were the circumstances that brought you to bring Saint Germain to speak to me, which, of course, started my own channeling, what is it, some 3 years ago now?
Yeah, just about. Well, I'd been receiving some messages from Saint Germain, and then at the end of one of them, he suggested to me that I might want to get in touch with you and suggest that you could start receiving his messages of your own. So I wrote to you and conveyed the message, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Well, in actual fact, you followed that up by speaking to me, and Saint Germain came through you, did he not? He told you he wanted a word with me, and you actually.
Now, I guess it was something like that. Yeah.
Yes, it was indeed, yes. Well, that's interesting.
Didn't remember the detail.
I never actually knew what happened prior to you coming through to me, you see, and I thought this was an ideal opportunity to ask you about that. Now, talking about how we started, what in your life were your first experiences that developed into your present psychic abilities, and how young were you?
Well, the only thing that I recall from my childhood that had anything to do with what's going on now is, I don't know, I must have been around 8 or so, and I went into our local drugstore, which was a real small hometown place, and I walked right past the penny candy and into the back room where the Frank Garrity had his office. He was the man who had the drugstore, and I looked down at his desk, which was down at the other end of the room, right in front of a window, and I saw a spirit hovering over him. And instead of getting worried or what is that, or frightened, I just kind of curiously thought to myself, I wonder who that is. And that's all I remember of it. But the fact that I remember it tells me that that I had those abilities for a while anyway, when I was in my early years.
Right.
And then nothing really came forward again until I guess you could say till I moved out to the Southwest about 11 years ago.
Yes. It is strange that often people that develop quite strong psychic abilities seem to relate that back to a time when they were quite young, when they had their first experiences. And I see in that sense that you're no exception. Right. When did you first start your actual channeling, and who were your first contacts? I mean, presumably over a period of time, they might have changed.
Well, my first channeling experience that I knew it was channeling was when I was in Oregon, and I think it was 98, and at my sister's place, and I had gone to a bookstore, and the book by Sanaya Roman, Opening to Channel, just jumped right out at me. So I took it home, and I read it from front to back, and put it down and said, okay, I'm going to do this. And so I did right then and there. And the first being, beautiful being, who came to me was Confucius. And he talked to me, and it was a very emotional, you might say, a reunion. He said that he'd been waiting for me to come to this point where I could welcome him back into my energies. And he told me that I, in his lifetime on Earth as Confucius, I had been his daughter, and that at the age of 35, I had, and these are his words, that I had happened around a corner in my village and happened into a melee and was trampled to death. And so this is why, you know, this is a very emotional time for us, and it was wonderful. He was helping me through a transition time into channeling and a broken relationship and all that, and it was really wonderful.
Right.
And so right after, in that same time period, I used to go down to the Sprague River, and that's when I was introduced to my new guide, Greyfeather. And that's how it all started for me.
Yeah. But did you research the subject of Confucius to confirm whether or not you were his daughter? Or that he had
Yes, I did. I researched that, and I found no record of him having a daughter. And so I asked, and he said, well, not all records would record the fact of me. In other words, I was not necessarily a daughter of his marriage.
Right, I see, yeah. Fine. It's interesting that you can track it back like that. I think we're all curious, aren't we, to know about these things. Relative to messages that you receive, in what form do you receive them? Is it telepathically or any other form?
Well, I guess you would say it's a combination. I telepathically seem to be in communication with some of them, and in other cases, it's like all I need to do is tune in, and it's right there. And I can just sit down at the keyboard, or I can start speaking it. And that's basically how it happens.
Do you mean by that actually elect the person you want to speak to?
Elect what?
Can you actually, by tuning in, pick up the people that you want to speak to? In other words, if you thought, I want to speak to one of your contacts, a vendor, by doing that, he would come to you.
Yes, I can request any of them, and also, you know, if it's not a request made, I just ask who's there. And I have been able to tune into the energies, and realizing that language is a vibration, and what my higher self tunes in, and it actually reaches out and touches the vibration of whatever information it is that that she intends to bring in. And so I have actually brought in information from the redwood trees, from some granite rocks in a beautiful space, beautiful sacred space here in Arizona. And, you know, you don't have to be human. You don't have to be a being of light as we know them. Everything has life. Everything has vibration. And it can be interpreted by yourself, by your higher self.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So I don't suppose at one moment you've tuned into a rock, but, I mean, since you know it's possible, have you ever done that?
Yeah, we were in a very sacred ceremony a few years ago at this place called, off Texas Canyon in Arizona, not far from where we are right now. And we were doing ceremony to awaken some of the energies of that place. And I was able to tune in. All the rocks there are all granite, and they're standing rocks and a really incredible high-energy place. And so I was able to receive information about their history and so forth, and the peoples, the natives and so forth that had been there.
I have read about this type of contact before, and I seem to recall that it said that the evolution of rock is, I suppose, understandably very slow, but nevertheless, the consciousness within does evolve.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, and they hold great information within their. Well, of course, granite is just full with crystal, and so there's a lot of information there. It's like a storehouse.
Right. Does it follow that if you've got a large rock formation, say as opposed to a relatively small piece, do they both have their own consciousness, or is it like a multi-consciousness? Do you understand what I mean?
Well, I would say
rock.
I think it's just like with anything else. This is a holographic universe, and anything that is contained in a small portion of it is contained in the whole, and vice versa. So I would say that this little, I'm reaching out here, I'm in our truck, and this rock that I've just picked off our dashboard, beautiful quartz, is, and it's, maybe an inch and a half in diameter, and it has as much information within it as the Rock of Gibraltar, say. And because everything is all contained within everything.
Yes.
It's all,
Yes, I can go along with that, most certainly. But still talking about your messages, I wondered if you ever received one that really made a very big impression upon you for whatever reason. Does one ever sort of stick in your mind?
Well, there's so many, and it's just like, it's hard to say one above the other that made an impression. Of course, the one with Confucius really did. But there was no any real one that made any more of an impression that I can think of right now than another. Whoops, I just put my glasses on. Of course, I've made a few notes here because my memory sometimes doesn't serve me. So, let's see. I don't know. The first time that I ever tuned in, you might say I was in the living room or the sacred space of a friend of mine, and I was sitting in a chair listening to music, and I really, it was like I was in meditation. And before I knew it, I started hearing these beautiful words in my not my, just my head, but in myself. And they were giving me messages. And they were telling me that I could receive that way as well as another way. And this was when I, you might say in between when I was channeling Confucius, and then when I really started channeling for publicly, my information I got from Confucius was more for me. And a few years later, two or three years later, when I started channeling, I started channeling Kryon, and I asked, well, why? I thought that Lee Carroll was the channel for Kryon here. And Kryon told me that doesn't mean that others can't bring me through. It's just that Lee is the main channel. And so it was like Kryon was helping me to get into this whole thing publicly. And so for probably several months and or close to a year, I almost regularly channeled messages from Kryon. So that was a very special time in my life, and that's when I, a few months later, Bob and I created the website, and so it was like he was my escort, you might say, into the work that I do now.
Hmm. Well, I like to read Klein's messages, and I've read, I think I can say, most of his books. And I think he's a very sort of special type of energy, and I'm really impressed with the messages he gives out. They're wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, getting back to the sort of your psychic, obviously, but I seem to recall, and I believe you still do give personal readings, in your time, have you sort of taken up reading tarot cards and things like that? I mean, the abilities that you've used.
Yeah, I did for a while when I was first doing readings. I was using some tarot cards for a while, but I wasn't using them in the traditional way. I did not make a study of the tarot. And so what I would do is I would use them, and I was led to place them most of the time in a circle on the table. And then I would just put my hand over one of them, and then I'd receive information about it.
Yes.
And so after a while, I just stopped using them.
Yeah.
And because I would receive information anyway.
Yeah, right. I think they call the circular layout is, in fact, one of the options that you have, isn't it, to read the tarot card. So what you were really doing, presumably, when you selected one, was you a point of focus. Would that be
right?
Correct?
Yeah, it was the focus.
To do without them, yeah. What about
with the intent.
Yeah?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I was asking, what about clairvoyance, your abilities there? I mean, how do you do clairvoyance readings?
Explain that to me. You know, it's funny, I know what I do, but I'm not sure if it's clairvoyance.
Well, I would interpret that as picking up impressions from a person's energy or their aura, where you can actually relate to them, possibly things they've done, people connected with them, and even perhaps through that be able to indicate what's sort of coming along.
I guess you could say that, because I do, I give readings not only over the internet, but, in person, and I can just tune in and get impressions. Yes, sometimes I get pictures, visions within, and I can relate them to them, and I guess you would say I'm clairvoyant as well, because I can, receive impressions about them, and I've also been able to communicate with those who've passed over who have messages for their loved ones.
Right, yes, I think clairvoyance would, to my mind, sum all of that up. Now,
right.
You recently wrote what I assume was your first book, because since I've known you, I don't think I've actually noticed any others, a book titled Menorah. And I wondered what your inspiration was for the force you to write that book.
Well, you're correct. It is my first book. And my inspiration for that book came from a friend that I knew who I met soon after I moved out here and moved into to Elephant Butte in New Mexico. And he was writing, he told me about the menorah. He'd actually seen that actual menorah, and he didn't know where it was at the time. But he said his friend had it, last he knew, and that it actually existed. And so he was writing a novel about it. He was a writer and an artist. And and it was, he would share each chapter with me. He would read it to me as he wrote it, and I became so fascinated with the subject. And then when he left town, I was sitting, I had a little motorhome then, and I was sitting in my motorhome, had just had lunch and decided to write a letter back to my family in Maine, and sat down and put my pen to the paper and started writing the menorah, just like that.
How long did it take to finish it?
Well, it was a matter of an evolvement of the book right along with me. It took about 10 years to complete it.
Gosh.
Yes. And in the meantime, not only the book was growing, and so was I spiritually.
Well,
and
to think of all that work you put in, now people can buy it in one book. Would you like to advertise your book and tell our listeners where they can get it and what it would cost?
Oh, sure. I have it available on the website, and I guess it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble online or something. But you can order it from my website if you want to go there to the Tree of the Golden Light and go to the Golden Light gift shop, and you'll be able to find it there and order it. And it's you can pay by PayPal or check a money order, and all the instructions for it is there, and you can find information about it. And there's also a couple of you might say maps for some of the information that's in the menorah, in the book, about the antimatter study that I was involved with, and that I knew it was needed to be in the book. And there's a couple of like illustrations that will help you to better understand the antimatter information. And they're on the site too, and you can find the links to go get those and print them off. So
now, for anybody who's wondering what the name is, can you just describe what the theme is through the book? I mean, you've mentioned that it covers antimatter, but what is the general sort of story there?
Okay, it's a novel, and it starts out in New Mexico, and the characters involved, you might say the good guys and the bad guys, they're all searching for the menorah. It is a menorah with Mayan carvings on it. And as the story progresses, it takes us through the search, and it also takes us through, with the good guys, through the, you might say, the growth spiritually that they undergo. And it's quite a journey, and there's a lot of interesting developments that happen along the way.
Right. Now, it's a novel, obviously. Is there actually a Mayan menorah? I mean, is it based on an actual fact there, or is that fictional?
Well, actually, since I published the book, Hatan has told me that, yes, it does exist, and it is one of 12 different menorahs representing all of the tribes of Israel. And he said there have been 8 found and accounted for, and that as soon as all 12 are found and accounted for, we will be ready for our ascension.
Right. That's almost a little bit like the story of the crystal skulls, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Those will be sort of returned and revived.
Uh-huh.
Interesting.
Yep. Yeah, I think there's all kinds of artifacts like that carry that kind of energy.
Yeah. Well, the one I'm waiting for, or the opening of, is the, well, I believe is generally called the Hall of Records, which is below the Sphinx. It's always been said that there are artifacts and other records which go back to the Atlantean times, and that it was discarded until the time of the opening was appropriate, and one has to think that that must be coming very soon.
I think you're right. I think there's all kinds of things that are soon to erupt into the public eye, and as you said, it comes when the timing is right for it.
Now, I know, obviously, that you do a lot of traveling around with Bob. What I wanted to ask you is something which I've actually learned from you, or Bob, is when you're doing that, is part of the reason to do work for spirit?
Yes, in fact, it's the whole reason. Because, life is spirit, and even even if you're out there wanting to camp and have a good time, you're still working for spirit because you're contributing those energies towards it. But to narrow it down to what you're asking, yes, we do our traveling for spirit, with spirit, and in the name of spirit. We did our family gathering trip last fall. It's almost a year now. And that was a three-month trip across the country, and it was incredible. We met so many beautiful, beautiful people, and we would do it again if we felt impressed to do it right now, but I guess there's something else that we have to do right now. But yes, this traveling has been definitely for spirit in one way or another.
Yeah. I was actually wondering whether it even went to the extent, as I understand some people do, who travel to specific areas to sort of charge up the energy nodes in those areas. I mean, I know people do all sorts of different work, but yours is more of a, I gather from what you said, of a general nature.
I think, I think that is maybe contained in both ways. Because when you do interact with people and have the sharing and so forth, you do impart a certain energy to the area. And then, as you say, you just go and you intentionally do meditation ceremony or whatever to build the energy. That as well is a wonderful work for spirit. And mostly ours is, as you say, the general nature and just interacting with people and with nature.
Right. Now, it seems to me that people that are psychic are more likely to experience UFO sightings. I wondered whether you had ever had a personal experience and what your opinion was anyway of their presence on or around the planet, and their purpose, indeed.
Well, I definitely know they're there.
Yeah.
I had an experience when I was living in Bisbee, and a few of us friends went out into the country to a home where a friend of ours invited us out for a UFO sighting. Because she had seen, you know, at night, in the night sky, she'd seen their lights and so forth. And so we were sitting around outside in a circle and looking at the sky, and it was probably 9:30, 10 o'clock at night or later. And all of a sudden, we saw this triangle of lights going from north to south, approximately, and being followed by five blinking lights, which were planes with jets, you could tell.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, they were doing their best to keep up with this triangular craft and not doing very well. And when the craft got to a certain point, then it abruptly did an about face and went sort of like back, but more of a, what would it be, an easterly direction. Really fast. And lost them. The jets, it was like they're probably up there, the pilots scratching their heads, well, where'd he go? And then, a little bit later, not too much later, a few minutes later, this same craft, it might have been, came right directly, and we were just down there on the ground just saying, oh, that was great, we love you, oh, please, talk to us, or whatever. And then this craft came back over, directly over our heads, lower, so that you could really tell that it was a craft, and went right out directly over our heads and disappeared over on the other horizon. It was incredible. You just knew that that was, you know, that they heard us, and they came back to salute us and to acknowledge that they knew we were.
Did the craft have any lights on it that you could see?
Any what?
Any lights? Oh, I'm sorry, I think.
The lights were in the I think it was like five lights maybe, and they were in the triangular shape.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it formed a triangle.
And they were white lights, were they, presumably? Not colored.
Yeah, and then when you see a spacecraft out there at night, they blink. You know, they blink and they all different colors when you're seeing them stationary on the horizon. But when they're moving and you see them, their lights don't blink as a regular an airplane does.
No, right. But it's right. Quite distinctive. Yes, I must say, I agree with you that I think some of these sightings do turn into being personal ones, because I did in fact experience that myself many years ago, so that's wonderful. Now, getting back to your messages again, every now and again you channel poet, and my own personal opinion is that I think your messages are extremely descriptive and often poetic in their nature. So in that sense, they're quite different to mine, but everything's for a purpose. Now, since the website's been reorganised, you have set up Nancy's Poetry Portal on the new website, nowandhere.net. Now, is that purely for your work, or can other people submit poetry? I mean, tell our listeners about that new site.
Well, actually, that new site, some of you may recall that back in the beginning of this year, when we were in Texas, a new friend named Ulla Anderson came on board, you might say. She offered us gratis some graphics that she had been working on. She felt inspired to do that. And so that's when we revitalized our site with all her beautiful graphics. And then when she, when we moved here to Arizona, came back here, she was at a place in her life because she had left Texas and gone to California, but then she needed to leave again. So anyway, she came here, and we're, you might say, working together on this new site. She created this new site, nowandhere.net, and it's representing the work that Bob is doing, Bob T., with the Papercrete and the play shops that we're giving, and also the spirit part of it, the part, you know, that flows in with the earth-friendly nature of what Bob is doing and the spirit and the heart behind it. And so she created that, and we just linked to it, and it's like a subsidiary of our site, in a way. And so she invited me to, you know, if I wanted to submit some poetry that I'd written, you know, she'd write me a page. And so I just, whenever I want to submit anything like the poems or all the Scrabbit tales and Pearls of Wisdom and all that, then I just send it to her and she puts it on the site.
That's lovely. I have seen the site, and I must say my first impression was how nice and colourful and friendly it was.
Yes, it is. She does a beautiful job.
Yes. Now, some of the new developments, as opposed to the old Tree of the Golden Light, is that you've taken up certain causes. What is the story behind the act racism?
The what?
On the Tree of the Golden Light, you, unless it's purely meant to be a front piece with nothing behind it, you have a declaration there, act now to stop racism. Is there any other part on the web that goes with that?
Well, it's actually not geared solely towards racism. What I was, I guess, are you talking about the signature page for... instead of having petitions stating what you're against, this is stating what we are for, and it's for uniting the world and taking care of all that is everything that is not to our liking in the world. And this whole theme of hands of light around the world and being able to take it from where we are right now and heal this world. It's almost like I get this feeling that we have, in one, on one level, we have already had Nasara, we've already replaced the government on one level, we've already come beyond a certain point, and now it's time to rebuild. And in that energy of rebuilding is where the healing is taking place. And what you focus on is what you get and what you create. And so to see that all as having, as being behind us, it isn't a way of denying what is. It's a way of seeing what it is that we intend for our planet and for our lives.
Yes, I understand that. Obviously, what you're saying is we're creating the new reality as we go along.
Yes, right. Now, it's like I had this...
Beg your pardon?
Oh, I was just going to say, it's like this vision I had of all of the players on stage, the so-called Illuminati, standing around, shaking their heads, scratching their heads, looking at each other, very puzzled, and then the scene goes out to an empty audience. Everyone has left because they have something else that they want to do. They're tired of this old play.
I hope that comes to be. And that's a very excellent vision there, I must say. I was just going to refer back to something you mentioned, which I believe is a project, Papercrete. Is that in the interest of promoting the use of what you might call friendly materials? Do I get the right impression there?
Yeah, that is in the interest of recycling all of the paper products that have been produced and are still being produced on this planet, newspapers, magazines, that are being put into landfills. Now, what the Papercrete is it's being used to create a slurry that is used in building of homes, building of fences, storage sheds, crystal gazebos, patios, whatever you want to use it for. And it recycles, it's good for the earth ecologically, and it's very wonderful to live with. It's very soft in a way. It's not hard. It's what inspired that message that I came up with a few weeks ago, Walk Softly on the Earth. And that it's a beautiful thing to live with.
So through that part of the site, you're trying to promote this idea, are you, of recycling these particular paper products for that very purpose?
That's right. It's Bob's newest passion, and he's just putting his all into it, and it's really wonderful. And so he's actually been out there doing, working with it and so forth, and discovering for himself how to make the most of it.
Has it invoked any interest from other people?
Yeah, we have some people already who are signed up for the workshop, the play shop that we're having in October. And there is a lot of information out there on the internet about other people who use Papercrete and have been working with it for some time. Yeah, so it's a hands-on, and it's a wonderful, and it's innovative, and it involves a mix of water, newspaper, and a little bit of cement, a little bit of sand. And it's mixed together and applied and poured into forms and whatever way you find that you want to do it. And I can see the potential for it to be done on a large scale, and it would be very efficient.
That's wonderful. Is the word Papercrete then a generally recognized one? It's not a word that Bob's invented.
Oh, no, not something he invented, but he's been working on some quirks with it that he's come against, and it's something. I don't know how long it's been around, but at least the last 10, maybe 20 years, I'm not sure, since people have been using it.
That surprises me, right. Now, you've obviously got sort of psychic vision, but I didn't think to ask you when I raised it a little bit earlier. Have you had any other experiences of seeing sort of ghostly visions or the likes? I mean, does that also pop into your sort of view occasionally?
What kind of visions?
Well, do you ever see ghostly visions as opposed to, say, entities?
No, I haven't seen any. Just the one spirit that I told you about when I was a child. But I have, I've felt them around me. And there was one time when I was doing a meditation with some people in Bisbee, and over the course of 3 or 4 weeks, it was a weekly thing, I would get this energy, I would get this feeling, you know, this, it seemed like the same one each time, and then finally, the last time, I was able to identify who it was. Someone was trying to get in touch with me, and so I was able to hear on a vibrational level, a knowing level, that this person, who I was, someone that I knew, I grew up with in my hometown, and she was she had passed over, and she had deposited, buried, you might say, in the basement of their home, a sizable amount of money that she had accumulated in order to be able to leave that town where she felt trapped, because her life wasn't what she wanted it to be, and she saw no way other than to do that. And for some reason, she left town without getting that money. I don't know how that happened or what the circumstances were. And probably all her life, until she passed, she... And I think she was fairly young when she passed. I mean, I think it was maybe in her 30s. She never was able to get back there and get that money that she'd buried. And so she came to me. She recognized my energy. And she asked me if I would go there and go down there and get that money for her.
Really?
And I told her that wasn't necessary anymore, that she didn't need that money in order to make the kind of life that she wanted, that she was in a beautiful place now. All she had to do was turn around and look at the light. And she said, "What?" And I said, "Trust me." I said, you will have a life far better than you ever thought you could on Earth if you just turn around and look at that light." And she did, and she was gone. And that was an incredible experience for me, because you know, we can do that. We can do that for them.
Yeah. So what you're saying really is she was earthbound because of her attachment to the money, until you explained that she didn't need it.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of souls are in that middle place there, where they're just so attached to what they were doing on Earth that they just need someone, and there are a lot of people around in the world who that is their work, that they help these souls to release.
Yes. Now, I'm going to pop one on you that you wouldn't be aware of, but it won't cause you any problems. I'm referring to your message that came out today from Hatton, relating to the possible axis tilt. I believe this subject has come up again because someone has circulated, I believe, some very sort of scientific information that suggests there is an axis tilt imminent. So I think your message today was very reassuring. But I wonder if you would like to just briefly tell our listeners about that.
Well, the message, the scientific information that came out was that it was causing the climactic changes and so forth, and that the cancer of the Tropic of Cancer was actually up across Maine now. And of course, that drew my interest, so I decided to read further. And it went on and on to say how catastrophic it's going to be, and it's going to be really difficult, and on and on and on. And so I said, okay, I've read enough, Hatan, you tell me about this. And so he assured me that there was nothing to fear, that, yes, there has been a tilt, and yet it isn't a permanent thing, and it's part of the process. And as best as I could interpret it, as I was receiving the information, it's like you've got this tension that's built up with this magnetic. There's a like a sort of like a push pull in a way, but it's more of a pull, and the tension is caused by the magnetics of the Earth. And the as we all know, Cryon and his group a few years ago did work on the magnetic grid, and they completed what they came to do. And what they explained was that when the Earth tilts, it's not going to actually be that tilting. Physically, it's a magnetic tilting that's going to take place. And part of the process of this happening is that it has to coincide with the raising of the vibrations of the Earth and humanity. And as that takes place, there's this interaction, and this tilting that's taken place, it really is and I'm getting information right now, it's really a collaboration between the intent of the Creator and the magnetics in communication with the vibrations. And there is a certain communication that has to take place in this ascension process between all of humanity, all of life, and the Creator, and the carrying out of the will of the Creator. And it also brings us to blending our free will with that of the Creator, and it will be all the same. Our free will be the Creator's will. And so in that, the Earth also has her part in doing this. Gaia does. And as this takes place, this tension that is mounting by, like, taking a ball and is attached by a thread something and pulling on it and pulling on it and pulling on it until the thread breaks. And then there's always like this instant recoil. And with the size of Earth as compared with a softball or a baseball, you know that there is not going to be any what you might expect of calamitous destruction that you would think might take place on that smaller scale as a baseball. But the size of Earth in that, it's one moment of recoil. It isn't destructive any more than it would be, you know, if there was no pulling on the baseball. And so what is taking place is another ascension symptom of Earth, another ascension change with Earth and with the magnetic field as compared with and in association with the vibratory level. And when that recoil happens, that instant of returning to, you might say, an upright position, then that's the zero point, and the shift will happen.
Right. Yeah.
And then we would be going, the Earth will be rotating in a counterclockwise rotation, which is not the first time for Earth.
And in that you also mentioned about there being, I believe, like a 3-day spell, which is fairly critical. Can you explain that very briefly?
Well, yeah, that 3-day spell, it's sort of like that's what the baseball would experience, a 3-day spell, whereas the Earth will experience that 3-day spell in a moment,
yes.
In that instant.
Right. So that is, I believe you said, is that the zero point with that happening?
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
That's the zero point at which everyone will have reached that total agreement of antimatter energy.
And well, I think that's a very reassuring message because undoubtedly, like you, I've had one or two people email me worried about that because, generally speaking, people think that an axis tilt is a very violent act of Earth with all the type of repercussions that you might expect. So I think that's a beautiful message. Now, I'm coming to the end of the show. I've got a few minutes left. I might remind our listeners that if they're interested in Menorah, you actually have a bookshelf, do you not, where they can click on that one and other books, which I noticed included one of Cryon. So I guess he's one of your favourites as well.
Yes, I created the gallery to support other lightworkers and their works of art and books and so forth. And each book has has a link that you can go to the website or to directly to the person if they don't have a website to order the book if they want to. It's just in support of them. Yeah.
Now, what I
think it's important
to
do that.
You regarding your own work, am I correct in thinking that you've gone back to giving personal readings so that you advertise the service now?
Yes, I have. I've gone back to that. It was like I needed to, I guess, well, there was a lot of clearing and stuff taking place within me. I needed a little hiatus from it, and now I'm doing it again. And I'm offering one option, and, you know, it's like they say, keep it simple. And so that's what it is, and you can go to the site and click on the channel reading button and then read about it.
That's great. Okay, that's fine. Well, I think we've covered it really now, Nancy, because I've got possibly a minute left to say my goodbyes. I must thank you very much for coming on to the program. Been a very interesting time speaking to you, and I think we've filled it up very adequately. It's been very interesting from my point of view, although I know you to some extent, to hear some of these more sort of personal stories about your experiences.
So, well, it's sure been a pleasure to talk with you, Mike. I'm glad you invited me on. And
very welcome. I hope you're going to carry on for a few more years.
Oh, I will, just as long as I can sit myself in front of that keyboard.
Yeah, the same as I do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to conclude the program now. So thank you again, Nancy, for being with us.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you for being with us on the tree.
Oh, you're very welcome. Well, you gave me the opportunity that's led me into a new phase of my life, and it's one I enjoy very much. So thank you, Nancy. I will say goodbye to our listeners now. We'll be back to normal tomorrow, I expect. Thank you.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you,
everyone, for being with us on this program. I think it's been extremely interesting to have Nancy Tate with us, and now you know where to go if you want more information. So I hope you'll be with me next week when I shall be back to my old format with the general news, a few messages about UFOs, ETs and the likes. And what I'm proposing to do is to try and get somebody on for an interview every other week. So hope to be with you next week and you to be with me. God bless you all.
Yeah.